Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. This week, we're talking money, money, money. With exponentially rising transfer costs and player wages in football, we ask whether or not a salary cap system might be the way forward. We'll visit the rugby union, the NRL, the NFL, and other places in between, questioning the efficacy of caps and whether they really have a place in the modern sporting landscape. So, Chris, very quickly, just tell us what a salary cap is.
So it is any pay to any player or anyone connected to that player by that club or anyone connected to that club. So that comes under salary, bonuses, national insurance, pension, image rights, off-field activities, signing on fees and relocation allowances, for just a few of them.
And vehicles as well, and it just carries on. The list is ridiculous in the end.
So we'll run you through rugby union, because that's the closest one to our hour. So clubs will receive about £600,000 in academy credits for players under the age of 24 who join for their 18th birthday. So basically that's a way of just getting around the salary cap on a club's behalf. And then all the stuff that goes into a salary cap includes salary, bonuses, national insurances, loans, child support, maintenance and school fees, accommodations, pensions, image rights, payments in connection with promo, media or endorsement work, off-field activities, blah, 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 more about accommodation, holidays, match tickets, payment in kind for a player that they would have not received were it not for his involvement with the club. And I think that's deliberately worded like that to be all-encompassing, so they can't just drop a few...
spin the words and be like, this is not what I meant.
Bars of gold or something like that, yeah. Redundancy / compromise, etc. No idea what that means. Agent fees plus VAT and national insurance, any third-party and connected-party payment unless demonstrated as separate. The only things they can get, international match fees, apparently, legitimate and reasonable expenses, private medical insurance, and then other things alongside that. So, you know, it's pretty all-encompassing, right? The wording of these sort of things are deliberately designed to make sure that the players can't sort of get money by backroute channels. Whether or not this has been entirely successful in all sports for all of time, I think we'll talk about later, but we can resoundingly say no. But, chaps, what are the benefits of a salary cap? Jack, why don't you kick us off?
And it's kind of used in different ways. So I feel like the main reason why it is used in America is that it encompasses the competitiveness in the league, so that one team that has a richer owner can't just go, you know what, I can give the highest contracts to every player and just kind of kill out the league. And the salary cap kind of gives it a fair competitive edge where all teams have the same salary cap and are basically told that this is the amount you have and you can use it for whatever you want throughout that team, and you build your team from that. And it kind of makes sure that that obviously there is ways around it in a way, which we'll probably speak about later, but it kind of makes the competitiveness stick. One of the other main benefits of it, I think, is and I look at this from rugby perspective, is the fact that rugby is growing at a very, very fast pace in terms of players' salaries, which I think you guys will completely agree with. It's kind of a way of making sure that these professional clubs don't become very stupid, in a sense that they go, you know what, we're just going to give everyone what they want in terms of salary. And then inevitably they end up going, okay, we're only getting 5,000 fans into a ground each game, and going, okay, financially this is very stupid. We are not making the money that we're spending on a cap. And obviously the owner can happily lose this money if he's making money elsewhere, but inevitably that's not a business model that a club, which is a business, should look at going, because if that owner does go bankrupt or decides he wants out, that club still has to warrant and pay those players that the money's in that contract. And bringing in the salary cap, it kind of stems that and gives it a little bit more control.
Essentially, it's increased competitive balance and improved financial longevity for all the clubs.
Basically.
That's what you're saying, right? Chris, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so as Simo was saying, the financial stability that it gives, and it's the thing really that made me think of talking about this with football, is I've heard a lot of people say that the amount that the players are earning these days really seems like the money's draining out of the sport and it goes straight to the players and then out of football. And a salary cap in a way is designed to stop that from happening. If the guys are paid the rate that they should be, there's enough money, therefore, as Jack said, for the clubs to spend the money properly on community programs, etc., rather than the money going just straight to the players, to the highest bidder, and overspending and getting themselves in a situation where they can't actually pay their wages anymore.
Yeah, and I think in football, sorry Tim, I think in football we can kind of see it, because if you look at the financial breakdown that comes out of the clubs in the Premier League, for example, they don't, a lot of them aren't making actual profits in terms of how they do on the pitch and everything. It's other things like advertising the sponsors that are there to help them. But it is very dangerous, because if you compare it to City, City are spending a ridiculous amount of money on players, just bringing them in. And then you look at Man United, their salary cap, the salary that they pay players like what Alexis Sanchez is on now, it's absolutely crazy. And if it just carries on going at that speed of growth, then it's just not going
to
work.
I'll say fundamentally that they're getting right. With I think comparing football to all the other, these other sports, it's a little bit too far past the point of no return, I think. But, you know, we'll get into this later. But the argument for me is not so much the players getting paid what they're paid, because at the end of the day, the clubs think they're worth it and they're willing to finance these guys to be able to play at the top level. This is only really an applicable argument to the top six. You can't be Burnley and spunk 200k on somebody or 200k a week on somebody. But the problem comes with the agents, because that's the true money going out of football. The players getting the money that they're owed, it's still effectively staying in the game. It's helping the game progress. Whereas the stuff that's going to the agents, that is lost forever.
Also, the example I'm thinking of really is when I'm saying that clubs are overspending and then causing themselves real problems financially is Leeds. And when they ended up going down the leagues because their owner overspent on too many players. I mean, as you say, it doesn't happen that often, and the top six clubs can really afford to do it themselves, and the rest of the Premier League don't really overspend as a rule because they've got enough money and they're clever enough to know they know they don't have to.
And bringing that to another sport, and you know it full well, is London Welsh in rugby. They were promoted twice in 3 years to the Premiership, which was brilliant, but they're a very historical club. They've been around over 100 years, which is amazing, but they are a relatively small club. And I think, I don't know if it was an estimate, I'm going to just give a guess, but they brought in about 20 new players in 1 year, which is pretty crazy. But obviously they knew that the level of players that they had wasn't good enough. And they brought all of these players in, were ex-internationals for top countries. And in the end, the way that they did that, they couldn't afford that. And the club then went into administration. And the professional side of London Welsh now doesn't actually exist. And they've had to go down to the bottom of, I don't even know what league that they're in now, but they are at the bottom of the English divisions trying to work their way back up. And it's a shame, because obviously, London Welsh is a very local club to myself and you guys as well. And it's just not nice seeing sports clubs do that. And we've seen it in football as well. And it's just not nice.
Yeah, and that was with a salary cap, obviously. That was the salary
with
cap.
With a salary cap as well.
So I'm sure we're going to come on to it later. But that was with a salary cap that was probably set at a wrong level for a club trying to come up into the league. They showed that financially they couldn't manage to cope with the cap. So we are going to cover it later, I'm sure, but the cap has to be set at an appropriate level, which maybe it isn't currently in rugby union, because it might be too high for the clubs, because none of them are making a profit except one of the 12. So it is, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Exeter are the only team that make a profit in Premiership Rugby at the minute. So
I'm surprised it's Exeter as well.
Yeah.
I think their location helps them a hell of a lot, because there's not much football down there compared to Exeter as a rugby club. It's a lot more rugby driven, and I think what they do very well, in my opinion, from what I've seen, is the stadium that they use is more used as a business. So
correct.
They kind of use it for conferences and dinners and everything, so they've got another income that comes in.
Yeah.
So as a club for Exeter, they use their assets very well, and they know that okay, they don't actually spend a hell of a lot of money on players anyway. They actually do it very well in the transfers, but they know that they've got extra income that comes in, and it goes, okay, we're a bit more comfortable.
Fundamentally, I don't think that those clubs can make money just from rugby if they are going to try and pay up to the salary cap. So I think all clubs really in the Premiership are looking at whether they could get whether they could get a hotel at the stadium, whether they could have conferencing and exhibitions or whatever. That is the way that they're going to make the money. And that to me, that just shouts out that the salary cap's completely wrong, because you can't make the amount of money to turn a profit just purely from rugby.
So not really selling the salary cap. And this is, we were actually on the discussion of the benefits of salary caps. Yeah. Anyway, we'll move it on to the difficulties managing a salary cap, so you can actually talk about the problems that you were talking about. I'll kick it off this time. I think that salary caps essentially penalise success. I know that's pretty...
What do you define as success, though, in that sense?
So, you know, say your salaries are extra and you go off and win the Premiership, right? You get all the bonus money that's associated with that. Granted, it's not, you know, huge in comparison to football, but, you know, it's a sizable chunk of stuff. But then you can't reinvest that into the squad if you're already at your limit with the players' salaries. So where do you go
from
there?
Well, I think, as Jack's already talked about it, it's come into sport, this salary cap idea, really, from the US, and they've tried to create this cycle of success where more teams are sharing success. But fundamentally, having looked at the figures myself, and I didn't actually think it was quite as stark as it is, but it's not really working, if I'm honest. So
no, it's not at all.
In the NBA, the Golden State Warriors have won 3 out of the last 4 years. In the Premiership, in Premiership Rugby...
Chris, I've done a whole thing on this, right? We'll go on to this now, right? Okay, so I've looked at the NFL, the English Rugby Premiership, and the English Football Premiership since 1994, 1999, when the cap was introduced in the Premiership, and then just arbitrarily, I think since the was it 90? Yeah, since 1999 as well in football, right? In soccer, in the English Premiership. So we'll go to the NFL, where it looks like it sort of works, right? You start off with Cowboys, 49ers, Cowboys. This is from 1994. Packers, Broncos, Broncos, Rams, Ravens, Patriots, Buccaneers, Patriots, Patriots, Steelers, Colts, Giants, Steelers, Saints, Packers. So there are a few repeated names in there, but that's all right. You know, there's a good little mix of things going on. Then it goes Giants, Ravens, Seahawks, Patriots, Broncos, Patriots, Eagles, Patriots. So suddenly you're going, oh, okay.
You're hearing one name. Names,
but Patriots is coming up a lot. Okay. So that might be good management. You don't know. That seems like there's a good enough balance. There's enough new names coming in here or there to make it work. You go to Rugby Union. Leicester, Wasps, Wasps, Wasps. Sale, Leicester, Wasps. Leicester, Saracens, Harlequins, Leicester. Northampton, Saracens, Exeter, Saracens.
Okay, so my first comment on it is the fact that professional rugby only came in like 20, I want to say under 25 years ago. So when it first happened, the club like Leicester and probably Wasps at the same sense, they had an infrastructure that was better than a lot of other clubs anyway. So they already had a structure where Leicester's academy, for example, has always been very strong. So they were competing at that top level constantly because of that. But obviously what we're now looking at is the fact that we are seeing, after becoming professional, we are seeing a lot of pro rugby players I don't want to say getting overpaid, because that's not what I think, but they are getting paid a lot more at a very quick rate. So the growth is very quick now, and I think the issue is that from my side of the view is the fact that, okay, if you're not going to have a salary cap, the club like Saracens, for example, or Bath, who have hurt my feelings a few times, but they have the ability to go out and buy players or buy them out of their contracts because they have a better benefactor, or Bristol, for example, they have a better benefactor who can go and say, okay, you may have a year left on your contract. I don't think they can do this anymore. I think this has actually now changed. But in the past, I think the last transfer actually that happened was Johnny May moving from Gloucester to Leicester, where they actually bought them out of the contract, which I think is ridiculous, which should never happen, especially in sport. But they have the ability to go and say, okay, we've got the benefactor that's happily just putting millions into the club. We'll give you all £500,000 a season just for you to play for us. And then it's going, okay, well, they're now going to have pick and choice. They're going to have 40 international players and they can play once a month so that they're fit. And then, okay, you're not going to compete in anything. And obviously, this is where, from me, what people think is happening at the moment is that this is getting broken in rugby. But I think we are going to talk about that later. And it's just very tough to say that it's not working in certain sports, but it is working in other sports, because you have to look at it as a broader perspective, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's no doubt that when Tim reads that list off in rugby, you're thinking, yeah, the salary cap's not working properly. But that's because the salary cap has been too high for too many years, where loads of the clubs couldn't actually pay up to the salary cap. So a team like Leicester that has been able to pay up to the salary cap year after year is therefore still going to be able to pay more than all the other clubs. It's only this season where we've seen money come in from CVC, where possibly next season, which is why transfers have gone a bit crazy in rugby this year, where next season everyone's probably going to be able to pay up to the salary cap because they have the money.
For the first time,
But if the salary cap's
CVC being Chris.
Sorry, they're a private equity firm that have bought a stake in the league and therefore paid all of the owners of the various clubs. I can't remember the exact fee, but it's millions and millions.
So I think there's just to add, I think it's everyone that's in the league, and then it's London Irish. There's 13 clubs that own Premiership shares, whatever it's called,
shares in the league. Yeah.
Yeah, and basically Premiership Rugby, who are the overseer of the league, have obviously had to speak to the clubs because the clubs are the owners of the league, in a sense. They came to an agreement, and I think they kicked back the first agreement, approach, saying that they weren't happy with it. They came back and they said, we'll sell. I don't even know if it's 50% or if it's 49%, so they've still got the majority.
Think they came in and they wanted a majority stake to start with, and I think that's what they kicked back on. They said, we wanted to give a smaller stake away to you and for more money, so that was good.
Yeah.
Good on their part, but yeah, it's basically pumped the game with a load more money that they will now, every club will, London Irish come up next year, etc., will they be able to pay up to the salary cap.
That's interesting. That had completely passed me by, so thanks for letting me know. Anyway, just to finish my point, just because I've done this, I've taken the time to type it all out. So since I think also 99 in the English football premiership, Man U, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man U, Chelsea, Man U, Man City, Man U, Man City, Chelsea, Leicester, Chelsea, Man City. So there are fewer multi-winners in the same era in rugby than there are in football, if you see what I'm saying. Granted, you know, comparing those two is not really fair, considering what you said with the development of rugby and with the position that football was already in by 1999 with all the Sky money. It is still interesting.
If you're still looking at raw figures, I mean, there's 20 teams in the Premier League and there's only 12 in the Premier League.
Yes, that was the next point I was going to make. But yes, you know, it's still interesting enough.
Posing that question did also make me then think, how do teams do it? Like, how are those single teams, even when there are a salary cap, how are they managing to do it? So, for instance, in the NFL, it's completely set up for it to run so that teams don't manage to stay up there. And the Patriots have managed to do it because they've
managed their squad.
Yeah, they've played a Moneyball game really, 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 really well and got value for money out of people on smaller wages and managed to run their roster without getting too many injuries to certain key players.
Let's go into a bit of detail with that, Chris. Like, just take us through it.
So, for instance, the one everyone's going to recognise is Tom Brady, who a lot of people have said over the last 5 or 6 years, which in the last 5 years he's won 3 Super Bowls and been runner-up once as well in the Super Bowl. Lots of people have said that he's the most undervalued team player in world sport, literally, because he's the 20th highest earning quarterback in the NFL. That's out of 32 teams, and obviously the Patriots have been the best team consistently over the last 5 years. So he's in a way, he's sacrificed his wage for success on the pitch.
For the team.
Yeah. He's given what he could have been earning back into the team so that they could go and spend that on getting other players so that he could play with good players around him.
So, yes, that's very unique because he is a winner and he wants to keep winning. So, and he's going to take the salary cut to be able to keep winning. That's fair enough and, you know, good point. But at the same point, the salary caps, at least the rugby union one, I'm assuming the American football one is the same. If they sell their own image rights, but they're not associated with their club or brands associated with their club, they still get the money. And Tom Brady is probably one of the 4 or 5 most marketable people in the
world. That was the argument that you'd get value for money out of being known as a winner outside of it. Mm. So forget your club wage, you'd then get it back in endorsements because you've won with that team so many times.
He's thought about his actual career
from
the age of whenever he became a professional American footballer to the day he genuinely wants to. He probably doesn't even need to ever retire because he's going to be known, arguably, maybe this is an opinion, but the greatest quarterback or one of the most successful quarterbacks.
Statistically, you can't really argue with it. Yeah.
You can't argue it. People will argue saying that he isn't, but I mean, the amount of times that he's won, and he is a winner, he is. And that makes his image, as his personal image, nothing to do with the Patriots, the companies are going to want to have him anywhere because people are going to recognise him all over the world, in arguably one of the most expensive sports. in America, he's one of the most marketable people because he's this winner. And for him, he knows that he's always going to have this income coming in after his career in American football.
Yeah.
So therefore, he's decided, and obviously this is all assumption, but we pretty much know it's true, that he has decided the salary that he gets from the Patriots is not going to be anything near the salary he's going to get for the rest of his life because of what he's done on that pitch.
So I think it, fundamentally for me, having done the research on this, what I came away with as a conclusion was it depends on the motivation of the players involved. A lot of players these days in professional sport are out there paying for the highest bidder. They will go and pay for whoever's going to pay them the highest wage, and they're not really interested in going and actually winning stuff or whatever it might be. They're willing to sacrifice that if they're going to go away with the highest paycheck they possibly could do. Whereas there are certainly lots of people in professional sport like Tom Brady, and some would argue like lots of the Saracens players as well, who also don't get paid as much as they maybe could do, who are there just because they want to be involved in a winning team that go and win stuff every single year, and they all sacrifice their wage for that.
I think to add to that as well is in rugby, especially for English players, they have this ability to, if you are being picked for your England team, you get a pretty nice,
exactly,
nice bit of cash. Yeah. Being picked, I think it's estimated to be about £25,000 per appearance for your country.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you're deciding to go, you know what, I'm happy to get paid £100,000 less in my career, in my season, to play for a club that's going to win, where you are going to be remembered for winning, it's not anything after your career, you're not going to be remembered if you're losing games or you're not going to do anything, that they decide, you know what, if I'm going to be getting picked because I'm in a winning team, which more than likely you're going to, they're going to get that cash back by just paying for England. Yeah. Which is very clever.
Yeah, I think there really is that contrast between what is the motivation for players out there. A lot of people in modern work outside of sport, outside of professional sport, job hop these days so that they can,
yeah,
get the career progression that they want to and get the best pay.
Bloody millennials.
Yeah, exactly. So it really does depend on what the motivation is, and professional sport at the end of the day is a job the same as anyone else's job.
I think it's more than fair enough going where, yeah, the money is. I've got absolutely no problem.
Careers are very short. Well, if you, yeah, get injured, yeah, you're never going to get this type of cash again. So I completely understand it as well.
Yeah, so this fundamental thought of all of the fans out there that think, oh, these players have no club loyalty. Yeah, really, lots of them don't these days, because
we're now looking at professional sport.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to get something else out of it other than playing for the same club for 18 years and being loved by everyone.
Well, throughout the world, every job is having, or every career is having that problem.
Yeah.
The minute you don't start your career at like Land Rover at 18 and retire at 67,
exactly,
or start Land Rover, move over to Aston, who are part of them, and then you move over to somebody else, and then you join an F1 team for a bit maybe as an engineer and then do other stuff, and you switch teams there and all that sort of thing, so you never actually stay anywhere. It's just
that is,
you don't broaden, yeah, your horizons by staying in the same
place.
That
is the modern world.
Exactly. And when you can get from one side of the world to the other very easily and quite cheaply, why,
yeah,
not,
exactly,
do it, you know. I'm all for it. Globalization is good. So this is just a natural bypass of that. Anyway, let's talk breaches. Who wants to go first? If you have multiple, if not, then somebody just starts speaking.
Chris, you can go first.
There was a very big difference in these breaches for me that I wanted to put out there first. There's a difference between deliberately going over the cap and an administrative error. So some teams have systematically tried to cheat and get away with it, and other teams have just, well, got their sums wrong, their accountants have somehow managed to add it up wrong, and they've ended up going over the cap by accident. And for me, the two are completely different. So for instance, the most recent example is probably Wigan Rugby League in Super League. This season got docked 2 points at the start, so they started on -2 points because they had an administrative error and went over the cap last season. The league, which is a lot more strict than Premiership Rugby has been recently, so both Harlequins and Wasps have gone over the cap with administrative errors over the last couple of seasons, which interestingly was to do with agents' fees and paying VAT on them. That's how minute the breaches were.
So only by, like,
exactly.
Okay.
So then,
I think that's one of, to add to that, I think that's one of the things that I want to give credit to Premiership Rugby is the fact that they have this structure in terms of people paying over the salary cap.
Yeah.
But if you go over by £1, you are, as it you give them, you have to pay 50% of what you paid to them back.
Yeah.
But they have this thing that if you then go over, I think it's, if you go over by £200,000, you're actually getting paid double. So you have to give them £400,000 back.
Yeah.
So there's a show that, okay, if you have done it by accident, which has happened in the past, I think the most recent one that happened was with Harlequins, they will be taxed in a sense by Premiership Rugby to say, okay, you have broken the tax, the salary cap. We understand that you probably haven't done it on purpose because you really haven't gone over by that much. It's not really changed anything, but they'll tax it. But if there was a club, which, okay, put our hands up, it hasn't actually happened yet that we know of, that has gone up, gone over by a long amount or a large amount, where if they do get caught by doing that, they're going to get quite heavily taxed for a rugby club as well, which I think is a very good idea.
Yeah, so it's interesting that Premiership Rugby have got this. The more you go over, the bigger the percentage you're going to have to pay back. Whereas I thought it was interesting that in Rugby League, the RFL came out and Super League came out straight away and docked points for Wigan, even though they pretty much had the same thing that what had happened to Harlequins and Wasps. They'd made an administrative error and they'd only just gone over, yet they ended up still getting docked points and paying a fine rather than just getting a fine. So there's one being a lot more strict than the other, but that may be because of what their cousins down under in the National Rugby League have had happen to them. So to give people a brief background on what I consider is probably the biggest breach that I know of, the Melbourne Storm had a major breach of the National Rugby League's salary cap over a period of 5 years. So there was a discovery of breaches in 2010, between 2006 and 2010, which included the team winning winning the title in 2007 and 2009, and winning what is the League Leaders' Shield in 2006, 2007 and 2008. So they were by far the most successful team in that period, and it was following claims by a whistleblower that the club were keeping a second set of books. The NRL conducted an investigation and found all of this out, and the Melbourne Storm eventually came out and actually confessed themselves that they had systematic breaches of the cap over those 5 years, run by a well-organised dual contract bookkeeping system, which actually...
This sounds very sort of...
Sounds like Watergate-esque, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's all, it sounds very mafia, like sort of underground.
Really dodgy.
sort of prohibition style. Yeah.
So that left the NRL ignorant of $3.78 million Australian dollars in payments made to players outside of the salary cap. Yeah, so not that's not just going over with a small error. Yeah, that's deliberately cheating the system for 5 years and winning titles off the back of it because other teams simply couldn't afford to get the same players that they could. And that's not the only time it's happened in Australia. They seem to be quite big culprits of it. So
just no before problem. We move on, Storm, were they backed by somebody very rich then? I presume so.
Not actually sure off the top of my head. They must have been if they had the money to go over by that much. But they're also quite a new franchise. So I think they had, ironically, they had some help from the NRL when they first set up as a club. Because Melbourne, I don't know if anyone knows, but is a much bigger Australian rules city than it is for a rugby league. So the league actually helped them set up so that they could be rivals
challenge
to the, yeah,
market.
Exactly, challenge that market. And it's ended up coming back to bite them big style.
Cost them a fair bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Give them the foot they
take. Exactly. and so that's also happened to Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs, the Parramatta Eels, and then in Aussie rules to Carlton Football Club and Essendon Football Club have also had salary cap breaches as well. So Australia seems to have a clear problem with it, and that maybe is why Super League in England decided to take a more strict view on Wigan than it has done in other sports.
2 points to me doesn't sound like a lot, but I suppose it does if you're relegation threatened or title challenges.
Yeah, there are perennial title challenges, so just that 2 points I think will make a big difference in the end.
But also that was an administrative error on that side, so again you could think 2 points is a okay, it's a different way of doing it, and they didn't tax them for it, but and that's the way that they... I don't think they taxed them for it anyway.
Well,
but,
yeah, well, they charged them. They've had to, pay money, but at the same time, they've also had that docked. And I'm putting this on the record. I am a St. Helens fan, so I'm not going to be fighting Wigan's corner, and even I thought it was harsh that they ended up getting 2 points docked.
So let's talk about football then. Let's finish off with this. What do you think about salary caps in football, Jack?
I think it's too late for it. I think it would be great if we had it in European football or world football, but I unfortunately think it is probably too late for it to happen, mainly for the fact that these players are already on salaries that are exponentially way bigger in certain clubs than they are in others. So if you're comparing Huddersfield to City, I don't know what the highest paid player at Huddersfield is, but I'm somewhat quite comfortable to say that it's well under £100,000 a week. Whilst you look at players that are City are probably well over £300,000 a week. So the issue is, okay, it'd be great to have a salary cap just to basically make it more financially stable, but how are you going to implement that in there when you've got arguably the most powerful league in football, in the Premiership, in Premier League, and going, okay, yeah, now City, you've got to have a salary cap. Please, can you restructure all your players that are under contract? And get them to go on lower salaries just so that clubs like Huddersfield or Cardiff can actually compete to you at that same level. So therefore, I'd love to have something in there because then it would make it a little bit more interesting. Okay, we do get the odd, amazing story where a team like Leicester do the dream and win the Premier League where they haven't had to spend anything in terms of cash compared to the other clubs. But, I mean, we've seen the same clubs competing at the top six and it's because they have the most money and it is a business to them, and you can understand that. And if you bring in a salary cap, it's just not going to work now, unfortunately.
There's very few other scenarios. Like, yeah. Let's say Worcester suddenly get backed by the Saudis. Yeah. They think, no, we don't want to get Man United. We want to take Worcester Rugby Club to the heights of greatness. You know, you can't put a salary cap on a state beyond what they do for themselves already. So, yeah, it's too late in football, let's be perfectly honest. And if you go even deeper into it, if you sort of suggested, okay, we are where we are now with salaries in the Premiership, we're now going to put a cap here. So, you know, the ones who are going to be affected first are going to be the top six. The talk of a breakaway to make this Super League in Europe is also, like, you know, it's not massively reported on, but it's bubbling away under the surface. And there was also an agreement reached very recently between the Premier League and the clubs, so that the big six essentially get a bigger slice of the money pie than they did before this slight restructure, and it kind of went under the radar. So what it was it was an even share of the broadcast revenue and all that stuff for all the clubs, but now it's an even share up to a percentage, and then it's based on your final position in the previous season.
Ah, I didn't know that.
So yeah, it's gone under the radar, and it's actually a very good Guardian piece on it. It's a long read. I'll put it on the website. But yeah, and this was done, like, not many people know about it. But that was sort of to placate those big clubs, just to say, look, stick around in the Premier League.
So it's not quite gone to the Spanish model where Barcelona and Real Madrid get three times or four times what anyone else gets, but it's still gone some way to appeasing them.
There's like, I can't quite remember the figures. So just take this as sort of rough estimates. Say 70% of the money is split the original way, then the remaining 30% goes according to your position, and then filters down by X percent each time. I'm not sure exactly the details, but that's how it works, which is, you know, interesting. And I think Super League conversation is one for another day, because I'm not wholeheartedly against it, as long as it's not a closed system, as long as it's an open system.
As long as it's still like promotion and relegation.
Yeah, exactly. As long as it's open, then it's fine. In my opinion, but you know, this is
we'll definitely have that on another podcast.
Yeah, much longer debate. But if you do anything to sort of stop these guys from progressing, they're just going to go, nope, stuff it, we're off, see you later. And I think the model they've got in at the moment with financial fair play is as good as it's going to get. And I think it does serve a purpose, and it has got caught out teams in the past, like Man City and, you know, insert Eastern European club here. who have tried to bend their way around the rules and failed. Even PSG, I'm sure, will get done for something at some point in the near future.
Well, it says it all, that even without a salary cap, they're still trying to cheat it with the rules that are there from financial fair play. That, as you say, it's impossible to ever get anything in there.
This is what I mean. With the financial fair play, though, it's like, okay, you are spending this amount of money on a certain player, but if you do this, okay, you break the financial fair play, what's the penalty? To be taxed. So therefore, the richest person here goes, you know what, I really don't care. I will pay this amount on a player and go, I know I'm going to get taxed. I'm going to be charged for this anyway. I'm just going to happy to pay that on top. So therefore, a player may cost 100 million, and in a sense, it may actually cost them another 50 million in charges because they've broken their FFP. But I mean, for them, they really don't care. It's another way of going, okay, if you break financial fair play, we're now going to deduct points off you. And it's going, okay, now that's going to have a detrimental effect on the club.
Well, it does. There are two different sort of FFP things going on. There is the salary side of it, where you just get taxed on it.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, like you say, but there are, all the leagues have their own FFP sort of stuff going on. And if you breach Premier League FFP rules in terms of total spending or something like that, you do lose points.
Okay.
You do get deducted. And it's the same with the Champions League. You can get booted out of the Champions League or not able to qualify for a couple of seasons. There are a couple of teams that have had that. I don't want to say Galatasaray, but it's that sort of club that have suffered that in the last couple
of seasons. Do you get transfer bans through that as well, or is that just through other misdemeanors?
I don't think you do get transfer bans. I think it's competition related.
Okay. No, I thought PSG may have had a transfer ban because of their transfers in the past, but I may be wrong there. I might be wrong. I probably am wrong.
Well, you know, like it's like this Chelsea thing.
Yeah.
Barca have had one of these in the not too distant past when they signed Arda Turan, and that was their only signing for a couple of transfer windows. Chelsea have got it at the moment. Real, have they had one? They've definitely had one. Yeah, Atletico, I think, have had one. So they you know, they're all getting bans for, I think this is signing kids when they're too young. But I think they're all for signing kids that are too young. I don't think it's anything to do with FFP. I didn't think the conversation would go quite in this direction, so I didn't quite look into it as much. So in summary, we're just saying it's not going to happen in football. Basically, what we've got at the moment is as good as it's going to get. And if we try and change it, all the big clubs will go, now we'll go do something else. Thanks, Premier League.
Just to put on record, we've said obviously implementation is absolutely impossible now, but just because of the way everything's set up and the power of the big clubs. But would you be, because we've got an Arsenal fan, a Tottenham fan and a Liverpool fan here, would you actually be in favour of it coming, if we could put a salary cap in, would you be in favour of it? Or because we support big teams, would you rather it keep the setup that we got at the minute?
I think there is the opportunity for upward mobility, even in this sense. I think we've already seen that Wolves are going to be the next sort of big challenges for that top six bracket. Everton are about to build a massive new stadium. They're going to be upwardly mobile. So I just, with salary caps, they're nice as an idea. I don't think they work anywhere near enough as well as they need to say yes, we'll definitely take one in football. Even if everything else was equal and we could do it.
I think,
and this isn't coming from a big club sort of standpoint, I think fighting against the prospect of coming up against Man City, who are owned by a state, and you get Newport, who have got a field which basically was ploughed 3 days ago. That's really part of the wonder of football, and a lot of the time it is just boring, 9-1 thumping City Burton, but then at the same point you do get a close 0-0 for ages before City pull away with it in the FA Cup.
And so, I guess what you're saying is that a salary cap really doesn't increase the chances of a Leicester happening. That can just happen naturally. So what
that's
really
a money ball effect.
Yeah.
Which obviously we all love, and like it's one of my favourite movies, crying out loud, but like just the concept of having an underdog winning. And there is obviously a way of doing it, because we have seen it happen in multiple sports.
Yeah, you can definitely coach around the salary cap. If that's the thing that's stopping you, you can coach around it.
And I would also call Spurs, Liverpool and Arsenal underdogs.
Yeah, we would 100%.
Yeah.
Because we go through these cycles of people going, oh, now I don't want them to win because they win too much, like United. And then you find half the country is supporting United today because they don't want Liverpool to win, even though Liverpool haven't won anything in a while. So, it's just, it sort of swings and roundabouts. And Spurs have been, so I'm going to talk about Spurs for a bit. Where have they been sugar daddied from? They've essentially had good management from one chairman, one very tight chairman.
You transferred very well as well.
And they've, Yeah, good transfers. So you can build it up. And what let's be honest, 10 years ago, almost to the day, where were Spurs? They were average mid-table side, weren't they? And now they are part of that conversation of the big six. And I don't see why Wolves can't get there, because they're clearly quite a well-run club with some dubious or not connections.
See, I think this is one of the things to say that if you are wanting to be that team to be able to grow, you're now looking at sport as a business. And obviously this does put people off because they think, oh, sport, it's a hobby. But unfortunately now, with it being professional, it is a business now. Yeah. So if you're looking at the likes of Monaco recently in France, they obviously are quite a wealthy club, but they...
How not to do it, exactly.
But they had a very good young team, and they did in the end sell the majority of their good young players for a hell of a lot of money. But they have not invested that correctly in, I want to say hidden gems, but again, it's not the right terminology because obviously some other clubs may be going for them. But you look at Leicester in the Premier League, where Mahrez, Vardy and Kante, they weren't very well-known players when they were bought into that club. And then Kante gets bought by Chelsea for 40 million and is arguably has made his role the most well-known role in football at the moment. And Mahrez, how he was bought for 35 million. And it's like, okay, fine. They're still competing now at that top level, knowing that they've gone and tried to invest it. Okay, they may not win the league again, but they are now a far more stable club than they were 10 years ago. Yeah. So they've kind of stabilised their club by doing this moneyball effect and bringing in players that aren't very recognised in the market, going, okay, we see the potential in you, and then, okay, if that potential then clicks, they've then got someone that comes in and spends a lot of money. And there you go, the club's a lot more stable because of it.
It is interesting that certain clubs have taken on, because they know they can't compete right at the top, the one that comes to mind for me is Porto. They buy a certain level of player that they can then sell on for a higher fee. They're never looking for the high price player. They're just looking for someone that they can then make a profit on. And obviously, Ajax do a similar thing, but through their academy. They always try and turn a profit through their academy and then try and reinvest it in the academy afterwards. These clubs aren't looking to dominate in the same way that Manchester City are, where they'll go out and spend all the money getting in the players for success straight away. They're looking to be sustainable through doing these certain scenarios. And for me, as a Liverpool fan, it's interesting that we've been looking to do Moneyball for a while, and over the last couple of seasons we've switched suddenly to a more Man City-like approach, where we're buying top-end players for ridiculous amounts of money, like Van Dijk, like Alisson.
Moneyball only works if you're a certain type of club. I would say that Everton are probably the highest-ranked team who could probably get away with playing Moneyball, and they've got players like...
to be honest, I'd probably say Spurs are the best one of doing it.
I don't think they are anymore. I don't think there's any more room for that.
Okay.
So 2 years ago, yeah, maybe 3 years ago when we were buying Dele Alli and Dyer, that's fine. But the ceiling of your squad gets to a point where doing Moneyball, you can't invest in sort of these hidden gems enough to be able to give them the game time to show what they're capable of, to then get the rewards out of them later. So someone like Everton, who can do that, they will reap the rewards. Yeah. And we're sort of thinking now that with Moneyball, it's one guy with a laptop who's finding these hidden gems everywhere. These clubs have access to all the data they need from every league in Europe and across the world. Finding the model that gets you the player that changes your team is basically impossible now. Like, you won't really get the Kante without being sort of having to fight with everyone for them, and City will just come over the top of you with another 10 million, just go, all right, we'll get him, and stop you from buying him, and then he might ride the reserves, or he might do quite well as a sort of backup, but that gem might not ever mature into something wonderful. Do you see where I'm going with this? It's just like the era of Moneyball is all well and good, and it is happening at a certain level, but at the top level it doesn't really work anymore because we've gone past that.
I could totally agree with you that it's the level below where they're still looking, they still have to make a risk on their investment because they can't afford to buy dead certs. They have to make a risk and buy someone that's ready to develop, and that is risky in itself. As you say, Tottenham, Liverpool, etc. don't do that anymore because that's behind them. They've gone past that point where they buy risky players like a Lazar Markovic for 20 million that don't work out anymore.
To be fair, now you've said that, 30 million for Sissoko isn't looking quite as ridiculous as it did when we started the podcast, is it? So, I suppose as long as you back the person who's running the club and managing the club, you can actually...
I've said for a long time that I think the most important thing for coaches is their transfers. If you have the right people in the club, then I don't care how you coach, you're going to struggle to get it wrong, really. It's all about who you actually get in the first place.
We've kind of gone very far away from our original salary cap chat, but we're basically going, no, football's not going to have one. And I think that's the answer that everyone was sort of expecting. Yeah.
I do think rugby has a chance, though. I think...
Yeah, so this is what I wanted to do.
Go on. So it's really interesting, and I think I've tried to think of ways of trying to implement it successfully, because if you are going to do it, you're going to want it to work, because obviously otherwise...
I'm just imagining you in front of Excel at work.
I get paid for other things, Tim. I don't have the time to do this. But I wish, genuinely. So obviously we have the salary cap now in Premiership Rugby, and we have had CVC money come in, and we're obviously seeing clubs like London Irish and Newcastle and Worcester spending a little bit more money or a lot more money going to that salary cap. The issue is obviously, and Tim, Chris has spoken about it earlier, I do think the salary cap is too high, and I think it's always been too high at the moment.
Yeah.
They do have nice little things that they do in terms of having luxury player tax and stuff, where you can have two players that
two
are
marquee players
admitted, yeah, which I do think is a good idea. I think it's a nice little twist to it, but again, I do think having the actual salary cap they have is too much, because of clubs like London Irish, Worcester, Newcastle. This CVC money is not going to last, so therefore, in 5 years' time, they're probably going to go all the way back down. Unless they bring in another debate, which may happen, which is locking the league and saying, okay, these 13 clubs are now the teams that play in this league, because we know that they are the professional clubs that have the right structure, and therefore it becomes more of a, I think I want to say like a franchise market.
Yeah.
So following the American system, just so that teams can go, okay, you know what, I know I'm not going to get relegated, so therefore I'm going to go a couple of years with playing a pretty cheap team in terms of salary, and going, okay, we're now just going to start saving up a little bit of cash to go, okay, we're now going to go for it again. But so one of the things I do think, if they were to implement it, okay, they're not going to be able to drop the salary cap, because it's very hard to go back on something like that because of contracts and agreements with players. It would just become a HR nightmare having to try to debate and sort that stuff out. It's maybe going, okay, this is the salary cap, and we're going to keep this salary cap for a while and just wait and see, because money is inevitably going to go up in terms of everything. And rugby has grown in that market, and you've seen it with CVC coming in, going, okay, they've seen there's a market there for it to grow. And CVC, if you don't know who CVC are, obviously did advertisement in Formula One, and they grew Formula One pretty big in terms of a market. It's kind of going, okay, we're going to put in this salary cap and say this salary cap is going to last. We're going to keep this for 10 years, and then we're going to review it in 10 years and see how it's doing. And I think if you see it in 10 years' time, you're more than likely going to see 6 or 7 teams now challenging at the top, or the top 6 interchanging it. You may see Saracens or Exeter still up there just because they've got the structure in there already. But I think in 10 years' time, once you've got, okay, players are now working out that market and going, okay, there's more players to choose from or whatever, it will start to diverse down the league a little bit more, and it will make it more competitive.
Wouldn't you say there is already quite a good competitive balance in the Premiership, though? Like, I know we've spoken about all this,
season there has been, apart from...
It's been more interesting this year,
This season, Saris and Nexter have been up the top, and everyone else has been really competitive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree with Jack. It's just not sustainable where it is at the moment, and it's impossible to lower it. So you're just going to have to keep it at the same level for quite a while until rugby's finances actually catch up.
Which is doable.
Yeah,
obviously, it's going to annoy certain players. Certain clubs and players.
Clubs as well.
Because we may see some players. And this is one of the things that we do notice in Premiership Rugby, and I use this South Africa as an example. Obviously, the Rand is a very weak economy, so therefore we find a lot of South Africans coming over to France and England come and play rugby, because they are very good at rugby, but they also know that there's a market there for them to go and get more cash. We also see that with the likes of Australia and New Zealand after World Cups, because they go, okay, the next World Cup is in 4 years' time. Chances are I'm not going to be in the New Zealand team, because they're going to want to build for the future. So therefore, I've got 2-3 more years at the top level. I'm going to come over to France. I'll use Kieran Reid as an example, because he pretty much didn't say it to the public, but it was like, I'm going to be available after the World Cup, I'm not going to play for New Zealand, therefore who gives me the most cash and I'm coming to you? And it's going, okay, that's fine in that sense. France is a completely different debate because they don't have a salary cap and they just do it at a different level. But it's, and that's one of the issues that we're going to have is if we do say, okay, we're going to cap the salary cap for 10 years, we may see more players going to decide to play in a different country. Just because that there may not be a salary cap, and so we may see more players going to play in France, for example, or and trying that. May even see more players going to different sports like Christian Wade, and they try to get into that market. But again, that's a little bit more off topic.
That is why, if you like, that the salary cap has been mismanaged in Premiership rugby, because they've been trying to compete with France, and yeah, they've just tried to raise it to a level where we really can't sustain it, but we needed to do that so that we could attract the players to this league instead of France. But I think if you have a strong enough league, and it's proven itself in the Pro 14, that they still manage to keep their homegrown players in their country. Yes, they don't.
There's ways of winning with it, yeah.
Yeah, you can have a fantastic team, but majority of them are going to be English players if it's in the Premiership. Just as Leinster have a great team and they have a sprinkling of foreign guys and the rest of them are all Irish.
And I think, and to add to it as well, I do think it brings in even more problems. So if you're looking at the top 14, okay, France won yesterday quite comfortably, but they're bringing, a lot of players are playing in that league that are from different nationalities, and therefore for the international stage, they're having a much more smaller market where their actual international French, or their French-born players, are not playing at the top level consistently because there's just not enough space. And I think that just brings a complete other problem as well.
But the league doesn't care about internationals. No. It cares about itself. It's very secular. So
yeah, so the league aren't going to do it for international purposes. But yeah, and it's the same as football, as we were saying, why they wouldn't bring in a salary cap now. I'm not sure, as we said, there's teams within Premiership Rugby that are going to want the cap to go up, because they know that that will mean that they'll be able to win, because they'll be able to pay up to the cap compared to other teams, and also they'll be able to attract the players from around the world that they want to. So it's going to be difficult to keep it at a level, because there's going to be so many people campaigning to keep on getting the cap going up. But I think they really need to take a long, hard look at it and think that the game needs to be sustainable.
We're also hearing a few of the professional players like Billy Vunipola that's come out saying, I'm happy to take less cash to play less rugby.
Yeah.
And obviously that's another issue. But I think that's one of the things that Premiership Rugby is doing pretty well at, is looking at, okay, a career is only 10 years, so therefore please, pro players, look at trying to build a career outside of rugby, because you may get injured tomorrow and that's that. And I think players know that their careers aren't going to last very long, so they much rather their career last a little bit longer, and they manage that. So some players are quite happy to go and say, you know what, I'll take a little bit of cash if you're happy to play me a little bit less.
That's actually touched on a topic that I'd written down earlier and we haven't actually come across yet, but whether you split the cap up on how many players you have to have in your squad.
Yeah, it's an interesting
you
way
say,
of
you say you have to have 50 players in your squad, and therefore the guys are going to be playing less because they have the ability to rotate more. But you've got guys like Billy Vunipola saying that they're going to take a pay cut. But when it comes to it, I don't know whether those top guys really are for the 10 or 15 that are going to come into a squad that are needed.
It's more to stimulate conversation that than it is actual, you know, let's do it tomorrow then. Is there sort of scope for a review on the salary cap on the horizons, or is that sort of it?
I don't think they do put it in stone for a certain period. I think it is constantly being reviewed, and the fact that the clubs are currently in losses, I think they realise themselves that it will be a few more years. I think they've said for the next couple that it definitely won't go up, just for that reason, because they think that the clubs need to catch up to be able to pay up to that cap. So there's really no point in reaching it. But they do look at it on a regular basis rather than setting it in stone for a longer period.
So one of the debates that they're having at the moment in Premiership Rugby is what I said earlier in terms of kind of locking the amount of clubs that's in there. And I do think that's kind of stemmed to the fact, in unintentionally linked to the salary cap, because obviously these clubs aren't making as much, or aren't making profit other than Exeter. And they know how difficult the salary cap restructure would be. Therefore, they're kind of trying to look at ways around managing the future of Premiership Rugby in this country, and it is definitely a way of looking at it. I know it's going to upset a few people, but
You can be a lot more financially stable if you know you're not going to get relegated.
100%. Yeah. And there's ways of working around it. And what I said earlier, in a sense that, okay, let's say your team is getting quite old and you know you're not going to compete at the top level. They will just go and say, okay, these guys' contracts are ending. We'll let them go. We'll bring in an academy. And all of these professional clubs in Premiership Rugby, plus London Irish, have their own academy link, and Yorkshire Carnegie, sorry, have their own academies linked to it. So therefore, they have the ability to grow again and it continually come back. And I think that's one of the things. Okay, it's not the equivalent in America is probably the draft system, where if you're a bad team and you get the lottery pick and you can pick the best player in that year's caliber, this is the equivalent. If you invest in your academy, you can get arguably some of the best players of that generation come through your academy, and you go, okay, if you keep them, therefore you could then challenge at the top again.
It is interesting that that does seem to have an effect. The salary cap does do that, in that the cycle of success means that the teams in the NBA and the NFL will wait some time and not want to compete, and then they'll wait until they feel like they have a good enough squad that they just go in hard and they'll pay up to the rest of the cap. And it does do it.
Unless you're the Browns, you keep
Then they just keep on picking the wrong players.
And I think the issue to challenge that as well is using Golden State Warriors. And I'm not saying that what they've done is illegal at all, because it's not. They've played it very well, in the sense that they've gone and got two of the best players in the league in the positions and gone and said, okay, we'll give you a one-year contract on less money, but we can guarantee you that you're going to get a championship. And they're like, yes, please.
Yeah, that's what we were saying about Saracens, isn't it? If you're guaranteed to win things, they're going to come for less money.
And I think that's one of the things that Saracens do very well as well, what I said earlier in terms of going, okay, guys, this is your career, but you need to look further forward from that. And I think on top of the fact that they give them the opportunity to win the top leagues and everything, they also say, look at your future and go from there. Because I think that is so key at the moment.
Yeah, it is interesting how strategic that the salary cap makes you. And it's completely different from football, where you're gonna pay the highest price. You are looking to get value for money out of it, out of an academy, or out of these players taking a pay cut. The whole thing is more strategic because you are playing within that salary cap.
At the risk of everyone falling asleep, I think we should end it there. That is a long, old pod, but a very interesting one. It's got a lot of sort of nice avenues to go down. And just to summarise, we're all in agreement that football will never have a salary cap.
Yeah.
Right, at least in the Premiership. Rugby, are you optimistic for the Premiership on getting a handle of the salary cap and actually making something meaningful out of it?
I think they've got the opportunity to. I think the next couple of years are quite big for them, just to see how they kind of control what's going on. But I do think they have the opportunity to. If they structure it right, they could really do very well in this market.
But are you optimistic? That's the question.
At the moment, I'd say no, just based on the fact that it's a lot of work and a lot of implementation to bring in.
Chris?
Yeah, I totally agree. The next couple of years are absolutely massive, because if they do raise the salary cap, it's a clear sign of intent that that's the way they want the game to go. They don't really care about it being sustainable. They want it to end up like football, and they want it to be the highest prices possible and have one of the best leagues in the world, which is possibly why CVC came in. Or they're more interested in rugby being sustainable in the UK and these clubs actually surviving for a long period rather than going out of existence if they overpay. Personally, I think the people at the top of the game do have a handle on where it is at the moment. I am quite optimistic that they might choose the latter rather than trying to overspend it.
Good, thank you. A bit of optimism doesn't go, never goes amiss at the end of our podcast. Thank you very much, chaps. This will be the Dugout Debate podcast. If you want to say we are chatting rubbish and totally disagree with us, @dugout_debate. Obviously, if you're here, you probably already know that, but share it with your friends, say it's all right. We'll be back in about a month's time. Hopefully, we're going to have developed a little bit. We're aiming at getting some new people involved, so fingers crossed for that, and we'll start getting out some more interesting and more diverse stuff in the near future. Thank you very much, chaps.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks for listening.